This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello again, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 138. And I'm here with my good colleague, Henry Viola Hare. He's actually in Edinburgh and he's just, you know, so dedicated. He's wanted to come on the pod and for us to record it. So here we are. Henry's in Edinburgh. I'm in sunny Leicestershire. You can find Henry at HT Viola Hare. Oh, that's his name. You can find him on Twitter at HT Viola, which helps. And you can find me at Conquers 3. It's been a busy week for Henry and a busy week for myself as well. I want to start this pod by giving a big shout out to Ian, Pat, Sam, Graham and Karen by the Sea and anybody else that I missed came along to the AIC showcase at in London on Friday. It was a fantastic event, the investment company showcase, which we all attended. Annabelle Brody-Smith and team, Nick Britton and the CEO, Richard Stone, absolutely smashed it. I can highly recommend that you go and check out the videos that will be on the website. I think maybe the end of this week, if not next week, regarding all the various different panel sessions. And I chaired a technology panel session with Kirsty Gibson, Mike Seidenberg, and Tim Levine of Augmentum FinTech. So check those out. There's loads of other covered emerging markets, India markets, income, dividends, you name it, was covered on the actual showcase that was recorded last Friday. Your thoughts on that, Henry? Did you enjoy it? The panel sessions and all the rest of it?
I did. I mean, I've been to a few investing events over the years and that stands out to me as one of the best I've ever been to, actually. The quality of speakers was excellent. The stands were really interesting to go around. The quality of the talks was diverse, you know. And so although they were all focused on investment trust companies and investment companies, I really felt like I just was learning nonstop throughout the whole day. So really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think the beauty of it was sometimes we don't give enough consideration to the fact that this is an insight to what the financial investment managers and fund managers and so on and so forth, portfolio managers, are thinking. This is the reason why they're picking those particular stocks for their portfolio. And I think that gives us an insight into what we should be looking at and reasons why we should pick certain stocks ourselves for our own portfolios, you know. And for those of you that enjoyed the last pod, because it was about investment companies and investment trusts, the feedback has been absolutely phenomenal. The numbers have been phenomenal as well. Regarding that, I think Henry giving it a really good overview, because how you just race through and talk about the stocks, give it a nice little rounded sort of viewpoint as to why does this happen and what does that mean regarding investment trusts. You all gave very good feedback regarding that, so I really appreciate that, and the numbers have been great, so we really appreciate that. What we're going to do today is a slightly different sort of take again. We're trying to stay thematic, so we're going to talk about smaller companies, small caps to just above small cap, and we're going. Henry and I are going to whistle through a couple of stocks because Henry's got a dinner date at 6 o'clock. So we're going to try and keep this one short, guys. I know Ian, who I bumped into at the AIC event, was saying, "Please, please, please, can you shorten these podcasts?" Ian, this one's just for you, mate. I can't guarantee we're going to get it below 60 minutes, but we're going to try our very best so Henry can get off at 6 p.m. And we'll try our best not to do any more 90-minute podcasts. But we also have people that actually want 90-minute to 120-minute podcasts. So we're not going to keep everyone happy. Henry, where do you want to start, sir?
Well, as we are talking about smaller companies, I thought I'd start with another sort of introduction to the topic, really. I mean, most of the people on the call will understand the idea of a market capitalization. You know, you take all the shares in existence, you add them together, and that gives you the value of the company as such. And a small cap company refers to the market capitalization. So it's typically a business that's valued somewhere between £50 million and £500 million. perhaps not very small, you might think, but anything below that, I believe, is called a micro cap. And then you get up to the mid caps, the large caps, and I think you've even got mega caps these days, which are the Apples and Googles of the world.
Absolutely.
So, being smaller businesses, they're often considered to be more agile and earlier in their growth journey. So, buying small cap companies supposedly exposes the investor and their portfolio to more significant growth opportunities compared to larger, more established firms. But they also come, in theory, with higher risks. Now, the stocks we're going to talk about today range between that 50 to 500 million pound bracket
Or just above in my case.
and just above.
Right.
Peter always struggles to keep things too small, too short. These stocks, they're often overlooked by institutional investors. I mean, if you think if you're an asset manager with, 10 billion in funds under management to deploy, you're not really going to be interested in a little manufacturing business that's worth 55 million pounds. You could buy the whole thing without blinking and it wouldn't make any difference to your portfolio. So they tend to be covered to a lesser extent than their larger investing brethren. And therefore, they, in theory, present more opportunities for retail investors, Peter, myself, and members of our audience to jump in and find some really hidden gems. Having said that, there are some risks. These smaller companies tend to trade in lower volumes. There are less shares traded day by day, which makes it harder both to build a position in the company without moving the price, but also to sell the shares when you want to get out. And due to that lower liquidity, the shares also tend to be more volatile. They're more prone to price swings. You're not likely to see Google moving 30 or 40% in a day. I mean, I really hope not. But some of
I
the
hope
shares
not
we're
too.
going to talk about today are much more volatile. It wouldn't be unusual, certainly for the companies I've picked, to move 10, 15% in a day. And the businesses also, in theory, are more susceptible to operational and financial risks. Perhaps they've taken on more debt relative to their revenue because they've got lower revenues. And sometimes they've got more of their revenue being made up by one or two customers. And if those one or two customers disappear from the revenue stack, all of a sudden it presents a huge problem for the business. Whereas somebody like Amazon or Google have got millions and millions of customers, and their revenue streams are much more diversified. So I think that's sort of an overview of the space. Peter, do you want to start with one of your names?
I'm going to start one of my names that's completely random that most people in the UK will never have heard of. But I keep seeing this company's name popping up when I look at the mining companies that I hold. And this company is involved in almost every single space that there is. It's an engineering company, and everyone knows that I tend to butcher names. So here goes. It's an AS listed company. And it's called Monadelphous Group Limited. And basically, the company provides construction, maintenance, industrial services to the resources, energy, and infrastructure sector. It operates through two divisions: engineering, construction, maintenance, and industrial services. The engineering construction division provides large-scale, multidisciplinary project management and construction services. These include fabrication, modularization, procurement, and installation of structural steel tankage, mechanical and process equipment, piping, commissioning, demolition, water asset construction, heavy lift, electrical, and so on and so on. I could go on forever. They do almost everything out in that space, Henry. And what interested me with this company is that they keep winning multiple contracts. And the last one, sorry, going back to the full year earlier on in August, they were basically saying that they'd got contracts worth nearly 1.8 billion Australian dollars worth, right? And they've now come out again since then and said that they've won 160 million Australian dollars worth of contracts with Rio and others. And going back to the full year results back in August, I think it was, and it's basically saying that Key revenue was up 17%. Net income was up 16%. Profit margin was just about in line, and earnings per share had gone up to 64 cents from 56 cents. And the primary driver of the past 12 months was the maintenance and industrial services segment, which was contributing 66% of its revenue. So I'll just keep an eye. I'm just very, very interested in that particular company because of the price range that it is at right now. So it's easily taken over by somebody else. But also, if these contracts keep winning these contracts, they could generate more revenue into the second half of the year and next year and so on and so forth. And it's sitting just about above the range that you spoke of, Henry, about small caps. It's an Australian company, and its current market cap is 1.26 billion Australian, which is 646 million pounds. So it's just above the range that we use for small caps in our space. The price range for the 52-week is $11.38 to $15.25, and it's sitting just below that at 13-odd. So far, year-to-date, the shares are down 13.6% and down 8.5%. So I'm looking at it having a better 2025. And whilst we're waiting, it's going to give us a 4.3% yield. Obviously, the dividend payments and how it's structured and how we get paid and the scripts and all the rest of it is different because it's an Australian company. So you need to look into all of that sort of mechanisms of all of it regarding that particular company. But the growth is there. That, as I said, they're involved in everything: water, energy, oil, mining. They've got contracts with everybody. So it's a small cap. It's not one of those companies that's risky, where it's got the bulk of its money is coming from one major contract. It's involved in tons of companies. So that was one I wanted to share with you guys. I'm just trying to see if I can pull up a picture that I drew earlier. I can't see it here. Can't see it. But yeah, so they're involved in tons and tons of engineering. Henry, thoughts?
Well, it's in a sector I like, or at least I say I like. It's in a sector that I know. I mean, I've worked in and around construction, but I don't know the Australian market at all. I do like the fact they're winning these new contracts. That is usually a good sign for businesses, and it's something that you and I have spoken about previously on the show. One thing that I like to see with construction businesses is a bit of skin in the game, and more so than other types of industry, because it's certainly in the UK, margins being very slim, there's an incentive for management to sort of take on too much risk, in my opinion, and they're less likely to do that if there's a significant director ownership. Do you know what the director ownership is like for this business?
Not this particular one, Henry. I've not looked into it deep enough, unfortunately. I usually start there, and I also look at the quality of the CEOs and CFOs ordinarily with companies like this, because it's important to see their track record as well as to what they've done, what they've said. Have they actually executed on what they said they were going to do last year and the year before? And having looked at this particular company, they are executing, but ordinarily what happens with a lot of them, everything's as margin compression, and there's mining stocks are in and mining stocks are out, and then they're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is why it's down for the year and down year to date. But it is one of those sort of companies where I would be very interested to see what they've done before and whether they continue to do it. 2025 could be a bumper year for them, given the contracts they've got. They're in the mining space, the oil and gas space, the lithium space, the water regulation infrastructure space. There isn't anything that they're not involved in, really. So that's why I'm thinking, as a smallish cap, 646 million, one to have a look at, because we're being told regarding our engineering companies, they're going to get hammered by this tax and that tax, and everything's going to change regarding what they can do in the UK. So I'm looking further afield and away and thinking, well, is all that obstacles in place being put with Australian stocks? So that's why I'm looking a little bit out of the way. So for those that are a bit more adventurous and want to change, you know, their UK-centric sort of exposure, go and investigate further. So it's a recommendation to just research, nothing more than that.
That's a really interesting name. I mean, I'm going to stay on that theme of construction, actually. Because one of the names I was looking at was one of the UK's leading construction groups. And actually, I disagree with you that construction's going to have more hurdles put in place over the next couple of years. I think the main thrust of the government's activity is to actually supposedly to reduce the red tape, to reduce the planning bureaucracy. And so I think this could potentially be a boost for UK construction.
Let me just caveat that, right? Everyone's going to shout at the screen now and say, Labour said they're going to do this, Labour said they're going to do that. And thus far, they've done sweet and they haven't done what they said they were going to do. That's what they said they were going to do regarding construction. That's what they said they were going to do about growth. We haven't seen it in the 100 plus days we've had so far. I want to be proven wrong in the next 100 days, mate. I want it to be boosted. This doesn't mean to interrupt you here now. First bit of good news they've had in 100 days, right? Today, and it's not down to them, this, right? Because it's September numbers, really. UK inflation numbers came out, surprise to the downside in a good way, right? So CPI came in at 1.7%. The target obviously was 2% before. And previously it was at 2.2%. And the forecast was 1.9%. It came in at 1.7%. So that was brilliant. So the markets went up. Core CPI was 3.2%, previously at 3.6%. Expectation was that it's going to be 3.4%, came in at 3.2%. Markets had a fantastic day today. I'll tell you about those numbers later on. So I want them to surprise positively on October the 31st. And everything that you're saying now about construction and other markets could be happy days, mate. But right now I'm thinking, Labour Party, what are you playing at?
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Well, certainly,
Off you go, mate.
if you read some of the commentary on Twitter, then you'd think that we're all doomed to be going down the mines again in another 100 days of this. So I'm slightly less pessimistic about things. The country doesn't seem to be in a great spot financially, but I certainly don't think we're on our knees and all doomed anyway. I've not quite got the
Yeah, I
crash
agree.
helmet out.
I agree. We could just do with more positivity from them and the media and all
It
the
certainly
trolls and
wouldn't
doom mongers
hurt.
on X. Yeah.
Certainly wouldn't hurt. Anyway, to come back to this business, it's one of the UK's leading construction groups, and one of the construction firms I worked for was also a construction group. And effectively, this is the sort of company that's gone along and it's bought lots of other types of businesses. So the business I worked for was the Carey Group. We've got a construction arm, a demolition arm, an asbestos removal business, a house building business, an Irish division, all sorts of interesting businesses. There was even an energy from power, a recycling bit of the business. Sorry. Energy from power, what am I saying? Power from waste.
Power from waste, yeah.
The brain switched off on holiday.
It's all right.
So nice diversified company, which I liked. And this business is very, very similar. It's Galliford Try Group.
Yep.
Now, the original Galliford business was originally based in the Midlands, so that's our neck of the woods. And WS Try was founded in the southeast of England in Uxbridge around the time of the First World War. So this is quite an old group, certainly. The two businesses merged into a national contractor in 2000 and then went on to acquire Morrison Construction in 2006. Morrison Construction was based up in Scotland, and so the Galliford Try Group has become a major player in both construction and the infrastructure sector across the UK, including Scotland. They then went on to acquire the Miller Construction business in 2014, and they've also grown from the ground up Linden Homes and Galliford Try Partnerships, and both of those businesses were sold in a £1 billion deal to Bovis Homes in 2020 to become Vistry Group, which is another company I own. Now, I really like this business. It's a very diverse sort of business, lots of different income streams in lots of different bits of construction. There's lots of talk in the press and the government at the moment about the need to have a sort of decade of renewal on the infrastructure front. The water network's on its knees, the road network's on its knees. We need more schools, more hospitals, more roads. Galliford Try builds all of these things, which is wonderful, you might think. But Even if the Labour Party decides that they've not got any money left in the piggy bank and therefore we can't afford any of this wonderful new infrastructure stuff, well, they also have private sector developments, office blocks and houses and logistics buildings and all these sorts of things. And the business has been developing these sorts of developments very successfully for a long period of time. Like I say, some of the businesses in the group go back nearly a century. So this isn't something that was set up last year. They've consistently shown revenue growth and profitability for many years, strong cash flow. And these are the sorts of things I like to see in businesses I invest in. They're on a relatively untaxing PE, forecast PE of about 14, so not too pricey, a 20% return on capital employed. And their top line revenue, I was quite surprised by the size of the business, £1.1 billion in revenue in 2021. That's due to grow to £1.8 billion by 2026. This is a large business for a small cap in terms of revenue, anyway. And it's not just the revenue that's forecast to grow. Yeah, earnings per share are due to grow 11% next year and 16% the year after. It pays a forecast yield of 4.1%, so a nice bit of a dividend there. It's paid a dividend every year for the last couple of years. And I think this is a business that, investors could do fairly well on over the next couple of years, certainly if this infrastructure spending starts to come through from Labour and we start to spend more on the public sector infrastructure.
Good call, Henry. It's a good, solid company. They've been quite clever in when they've exited businesses. They've had a few hiccups historically. I think going back 6 years ago, where some margin stuff squeezed them. I think it was in Scotland. I forget which motorway they were dealing with, and there was a few bits and pieces going on that caused them a bit of a headache. But they seem to have got the balance right now, or more recently, and the fact they've got a fair bit of cash on the balance sheet. I mean, I've pulled up the notes here. It's saying high cash reserves of 155 million in net cash at the financial year end gives them that buffer. You know, I mean, it gives that little cushion. Whereas a lot of construction firms and a lot of firms and listed entities, they tend to be looking there, going, you know, I mean, we've just got enough to keep the lights on. We have to make another placing. You know, there doesn't seem to be that worry regarding them, and given the amount of contracts they've got, it's a cash. The cash flow is coming in. So they can service any other issues that they've got. Obviously, the material costs have been coming up and down, you know. So today's numbers regarding inflation may even be positive for them if it's coming down, you know. So yeah, good solid company. It's done reasonably well, I think, over the last year and a bit, hasn't it? Or so,
It has.
stock price wise. So it's not at its lows. And if Henry, capital IF, the UK's current government, which could be short-lived, they don't pull the fingers out. If they do deliver and surprise to the upside, and we see some more positivity and less gloom, God, the Tri could have an exceptional year if they actually, you know, are encouraged to do more and the government actually do pursue a strategy of growth. So yeah, good call. You don't currently own this one, did you say, or
I don't know.
you don't?
No,
Well,
I
you've got
don't
Vistry.
actually. Yeah, I mean, I do own Vistry. I mean, these shares, I was looking at them back when they were sort of £2.20-ish at the beginning of the year, £2.30-ish.
Yeah.
And they've gone on a terrific tear this year. I mean, they're up 60% year to date.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, since I think it's sort of July time, give or take, they've absolutely skyrocketed. They sort of bat around in a range the first half of the year, and they've absolutely taken off on some very strong results this year. And I think it's just the first of a long string of positive upgrades to come. I feel quite positive about this business. So,
Right. So
yeah.
this isn't so like you. There's another one. I've got about five that have done that similar. It's on your watch list, and you're going, "Come on back here. I want to buy it." And it
Exactly,
just keep
yeah.
going, whoop, 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 taking off. We can't
Annoyingly,
have them all.
if they could
Sorry,
do
go
what Vistry have just done, Vistry just announced that they'd accidentally mispriced some house building by 150 million. The shares fell off a cliff.
on.
And I thought, if these two could just swap that narrative round, that would be lovely. I'd be very happy.
Oh dear. Mate, if they're not careful, God for the trial, come back and buy back what they sold from them and take the whole group out.
Exactly.
Crazy, crazy. Right, I did say no. Great call on Galliford Try, mate. I'm sorry you didn't purchase it when you were looking at it initially. I'm gonna go back and just say about the markets because they've had a really really good day. Still trapped in the same sort of trading range of for the FTSE 100, 8,200 and just plus or minus 20 points to 8,400. We'd had a difficult start to the week, and here we are on the 16th, and the inflation numbers slowly but surely kicked on this morning into the afternoon, and we didn't see the close because we started talking about this at half past four. But at the last look, the close, the numbers I've got for the FTSE 100 was it was up 1%, 1.02%, a full 84 points up today. With the FTSE was at 8,333 when I looked at it before the close, before the market had even closed. FTSE 250 was up 1.08%, 224 points at 21,019 points. FTSE All Share was up 1.02% as well at 4,554. And the AIM All Share was up 0.75% at 739 points. So all round markets had a good day boosted by those CPI and core CPI numbers for inflation. So yeah, all good. So we're hoping that would be positive for our small caps and general markets, Henry. So I want to talk about another one now, which is sitting in the small cap space, and it is called Molten Ventures, Henry. Yeah. Ticker symbols grow. Price range at the moment is £2 to £4.32. Today it was at £3.97 before the markets closed. And year to date, the shares are up 43%. And in the past 12 months, up 86%. And the bit that you're not going to believe is that the shares are currently sitting at a huge discount to NAV. You know, it needs further investigation. I'm going to briefly talk about this. I'm conscious about the time. But Molten Ventures is a venture capital firm investing and developing disruptive, high growth technology companies. The company invests across the United Kingdom and Europe in private, high growth technology companies. And the company invests in various sectors such as consumer technology, enterprise technology, hardware, and deep tech and digital health and wellness. Its core portfolio companies include Aircall, CoachHub, Avon, Endomag, Fintech, and numerous others. But the main one that everyone's raving about, and that's been driving most of the share price of Molten Ventures, is Revolut. You know about Revolut, Henry?
I do,
Yeah.
yes.
So Revolut is a online bank, essentially digital. Only financial institution. It's grown rapidly and now boasts over 45 million customers worldwide. It's been under a bit of scrutiny of late, or more recently in the past year or so, via Panorama investigation, which revealed some reports of fraud being able to taken place within the systems of what they're involved in Revolut. But more recently, given that they've got a stake in the company, the valuation for Revolut was basically the fundraise or a raising, sorry to say, and they were given a market cap potentially of 45 billion. Yeah. So they do an investment round, it's got 45 million. So based on that particular valuation, the gross value for Molten at the moment regarding Revolut would be approximately 160 million pounds. So given the market cap of the company, it's currently sitting at 601. Yeah, that's a big chunk of their valuation. And it's sitting currently at the moment at 40 to 4. I don't know what the close was of the price, but about 40% discount to NAV. So that will give it a nice boost going forward to Molten. So that's why I want to talk about that one. And just keep an eye on it because I think it's every single time they come out with something, there's a good opportunity that something's going to either be IPO'd if better markets are ahead in 2025, or private equity is going to say, look, we're going to purchase that off you. And they keep having uplifts and exits from companies that don't list that are taken over by other entities that they've got a stake in. So still sitting at a huge discount. And something to keep an eye on is the companies that are buying into Molten Ventures as well. And the last time I saw something incremental about it was BlackRock, of all people, very large entity, behemoth, in fact, increasing their stake to 12.9% of Molten Ventures. So why are they increasing their stake despite the price going up 86% in the past year? So yeah, another one to keep an eye on. Market cap's just sitting there just above the parameters of 50 to 500 at 601 million pounds. So there you go, Henry. Another
I
one
like
for you,
that
mate.
a lot. I mean, one of the chaps you had on your panel at the AIC event from Augmentum Fintech, they list in un they sorry, they invest in unlisted businesses. Fascinating chap. And the talk he was giving was all about, giving investors exposure to these businesses that you wouldn't usually gain exposure to. And I forget what figure he quoted on one of the early stage companies that, it was sort of the one in a million investments that he'd made that had gone up 60,000% or something ludicrous.
Betfair.
Betfair, that was it. And you don't need many of those for the portfolio to do terrifically well. So yeah, Molten Ventures is a name I've looked at previously. I do struggle with these venture capital type businesses because whilst I get the story, we get in early doors, we wait for the valuation to grow, then we recycle the capital when we make an exit and, continue to grow the portfolio. When I actually look at what they're holding, an awful lot of the businesses, and this isn't specific to Molten, but generally, an awful lot of the businesses, I think to myself, well, what's really the differentiator here? Why have you decided this one's so fantastic? I've not got a clue. You're just telling me it is. It's sort of, do I want grey or do I want light black or do I want dark white? It's the same color, guys.
That's harsh, but you spoke about it. It's the hit rate, isn't it? They've essentially got Revolut, which has been an absolute barnstormer for them. However, it's that one in 20, one in 50, maybe one in 50, and the others might be okay, but there's going to be at least half of that 50 that completely they don't make any money on. So they make a little bit on that one, and they might get the odd one that goes 20-fold or 50-fold or whatever. But how many times are you going to get a Betfair, which then gets taken over by Flutter and makes 70 times your money? I don't know, is the answer. But that's what they're looking for, the Holy Grail. They want that particular sort of company. But they only come around generationally, I think. But yeah, we'll see if Revolut IPO next year. That valuation it seems absolutely maddening to me. That's essentially one of our largest banks at 45 million quid there. And this is one that not everybody's using yet, and I've never used it. I've got no intentions of using it, but it's digital, so therefore it's far more valuable than anything that's bricks and mortar bank. Anyway, there you go. So where are we at with that one? Did I say there was a yield? There's not much. I don't think there was a yield on
I
that,
doubt
Henry,
there'll be a
either.
yield on it. They tend to
I don't think there was a
reinvest the
yield on that.
capital back into the portfolio.
I don't think there was a yield on it. But yeah, a big chunky dividend. I'm sorry, big chunky discount to that one. So that's one cautionary to have a look at. Research. BlackRock have got 12%. They're no fools, but we'll see how that goes.
See, the other thing that makes me a little nervous with these is that they sort of mark their own homework. I once met some chaps from, I think it was the Oxford Venture Capital Trust. Lovely fellas. And I apologies if I've got the name wrong here, but they've got a basket of 30 or 40 very, very, very tiny businesses that they selected in and around Oxfordshire. They were based on a science park and they met these firms, they buy in. They'd only made a handful of exits. If they owned 60 businesses, I think they'd released capital from sort of six over 10 years. And therefore, they've used this as a benchmark to say, well, our portfolio is growing at a rate of 300%, 30% annualized. Well, it's not really. It just so happens that the six you've managed to get out of, you've managed to get out of at good prices. When was the last time you released one of these? Oh, well, 3 years ago. And you think, well, how is this going to stand up in the event that you actually try to realize all this value you've supposedly got? And that's what
Good
makes me
point.
a little
Good point.
nervous, because where is companies that pay a dividend? They have to have the real physical cash flow. You can't pay dividends out of nothing. So either you have to raise debt, raise equity, or actually generate some profit. These companies that are not paying the dividend and are just marking the net asset value up, how do you actually test that NAV?
I don't want to say the word again, Henry, but we've been there with two other companies that we both invested in, and they were marking their own homework and getting paid for that NAV, and the NAV wasn't accurate. So I hear
Exactly.
you loud and clear, mate. But we're not going to say the word on, we're not going to say that word again on this pod for a little while until there's some good news regarding both of those
No,
entities.
I don't want
But
my
you're spot
holiday
on.
ruining.
But you are spot on. You've got to be mindful as to where did they get this valuation from? Why have you invested in that? What's the difference between that one and that one over there? So yeah,
Exactly.
great call, mate, and great analysis regarding that. And it's one of those that it's an adventurous one to look at. It's had a really good run because of Revolut, year to date and over the past 12 months. Just keep an eye on it. If there's noise around, Revolut's going to be IPOing, I'd be looking at seeing where the valuation is of Molten. And other people that have other entities that have got a stake in Revolut as well, not just them. So yeah, most definitely. All right, mate, let's take a break here now. Can we chat about the charity now, mate, before we get to your next stop? Who's made some kind donations, what the balance is at? And also I want to say before you do that, a huge thank you to everybody that's listened to the pod, the last pod on YouTube, and also given us feedback on X. The feedback's been absolutely phenomenal. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you all for recently subscribing as well, and boosting the numbers there, and for liking it, sharing it, commenting on it. And if there's something you don't like about it, tell us about that as well, so we can improve on the next one. Apart from the fact you don't like me being on the program, that I'll take that to heart, and I might have to just leave Henry to do it on his own. Right. Okay, Henry, go for it, mate.
You're giving me a fit of the giggles now. Please don't leave me on my own. Right, where are we with Just Giving? We've had a few more donations. We are at 64% of our £5,000 target, £3,206 from 73 supporters. And the donations
Fantastic.
continue to
Thank you.
flow from our ever
Thank you.
generous audience. We have had £25 plus £6.25 gift aid from our very generous guest, recent guest, Matthew Gregory. It
Oh,
is the
thank you,
spooky
Matt.
season. It is the spooky season, so a treat from me. Keep up the great podcast, chaps. Plus, thank you for being a positive influence in what feels like an ever more negative world.
Thank you for that, Matt. You're spot on. Lots of negativity in politics on X, driving people off the platform. I don't know what to say about it. I'm keeping my head down at the minute. I'm not on X as much as that I used to be, and I'm going to be on it even less going forward, I think, until after the US elections, and maybe more so even after the election, depending on what that outcome is. I'm a positive sort of person. You know what I mean? I like to be around positive people, which is why it was so refreshing to be at that AIC showcase, Henry. And nice vibe throughout, nice atmosphere, nice camaraderie, And then afterwards, we're just all socializing together, having a drink, chat, analyzing things, talking about stuff in general. Fantastic. It's good to be around positive people. Negative people just drain the soul and life out of you. No need. I don't need that in my life.
You're
So
spot on.
yeah, Matthew's spot on. More and more positivity. If you've got something positive to say on Twitter, on X, please tag Henry and I in and share the positivity. We'd love to hear from you.
We always do. On that note, actually, I've had a very nice message from Pandas Trader, who reached
Okay.
out. Long-time listeners to the pod, pops up in my DMs. Hi, just wanted to say I've been listening to the pod. I'm not very active on Twitter. I hope you don't mind. And I thought, why on earth would I mind? He sent me an absolutely lovely message, and then
Brilliant.
went on. And I said, would you mind putting some of this public? Because we'd had a really interesting conversation about REITs and labs, and went on to write a really interesting and insightful thread on the back of our last podcast. And I thought, this is exactly the sort of thing I love to see from our audience. It put a huge smile on my face. And it was a great set of content from one of our listeners. So thank you very much to Pandas as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Pandas bear, I think.
We've also had a donation from Paul L. I admire the honesty of the podcast. Please keep up the good work and well done on supporting this excellent cause. £25 and £6.25 gift aids. Thank you very much,
Brilliant.
Paul.
Thank you very much, Paul.
So yes, like I say, that does take us up to £3,206, 64% of our target. We've got 2.5 months left of the year. I would love it. I would dearly love it if we could hit that £5,000 goal, £5,000 towards Centrepoint, the UK's leading homelessness, youth homelessness charity. There is a startling amount of homelessness. I see a lot of it in London. I've come up to Edinburgh, and sadly, it's everywhere these days. People struggling for shelter on park benches. It shouldn't happen to anybody. I'm having a lovely holiday up here. We've had a lovely couple of days. We're here for a few more days before we go on to York. And I feel very, very grateful to be able to do that. And it's terrible that there are people out there that don't have even a roof over their own heads. Today it's been absolutely bucketing down in Edinburgh. It was cold yesterday, it's freezing wet today. It must be dreadful to be stuck out there. So if anybody can donate, even if it's only a few pounds, the page is justgiving.com/page/TwinPeaksChallenge24. That's TwinPeaksChallenge24. Please do consider giving a few pounds. It goes towards a great cause, helping to prevent young people ending up on the streets and helping get those that are on the streets into shelter. All donations are very gratefully received.
Brilliantly said, Henry. And thank you for sharing that. I would like add as well, regarding individuals who are considering making a donation. The beauty that I find regarding the work that Henry and I do on this pod is when we get individuals we've never met before making a donation. Saying what the impact has we've had on them by what the information that we've shared, and we're doing what we're doing to try and make a difference to other people's lives that we haven't met. We're doing what we're doing to try and educate other people, and what we're asking you to do in return, if you could be so kind, is to do that and pay it forward to these young individuals that are finding it very, very difficult. It's only going to get colder. It's only going to get worse weather-wise over the next 2 or 3, 4 months. And it's going to be very difficult for some of them to survive over the next 3 or 4 months. And we could make that difference by helping them find accommodation via Centrepoint by the donations that we make and the money that we raise for them. So please, please consider it. Thank you ever so much.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEATS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPEATS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Right, Henry, can we move to your next sort of stock you want to talk about in the smallish cap space. I say smallest because I've cheated on both of mine so far.
I was going to say, you're a
Both have
dirty,
my
rotten
fibers.
cheat, you are, Peter. Flipping heck. I was very careful to stay in the small cap bracket. So, my next company is a £297 million market cap business.
Okey-dokey.
The ticker is XPP. The company is XP Power. Bear with me. I'm afraid I've got a frog in my throat here.
Bit of water, mate.
Oh,
Real water.
I've had a
Yeah.
bit of it. I've had a bit
X
of a
X
tickle
XP.
coming on all day.
No worries, mate. No worries.
Right,
So
that's better.
XP Power, 297 million market cap.
That's the
Yeah.
one. So they are a manufacturer of something called power converters, which transform high voltage alternating current from main supply into stable low voltage direct current. Now, imagine you're a healthcare provider or you're rolling out a piece of industrial equipment. The last thing you want is to have power destroying the equipment. And apparently, this is quite a common thing. Dear, oh dear, this frog's getting worse and
I can
worse.
hear the frog. I can literally hear the frog. Do you want me to? Do you want to stop there and I do my company while you get yourself
I was going
composed?
to say, bear with me. If you just pick up for a moment, Peter, I'll try and recover my voice for a moment.
Right, okie dokie. Let me just pick up some things here if I can find something on XP because I haven't prepared this one. So I'm looking here at some data, Henry, and we're going back to October the 8th. And it's saying that XP Power's Q3 revenue drops, but orders rise, hinting at a brighter Q4. Market challenges persist. The 2024 outlook is in line with analysts. However, they're expecting lower profits, and the shares were down slightly at the beginning of the month when they came out with those numbers. Order intake increased. But full year requires order conversion and slower channel destocking was one of the issues. So basically, it's got a lot to do from the numbers that it's just put out there. Doesn't pay a dividend, and board taking a long-term view. And if I'm remembering this rightly as well, Henry, and I'm sure you're going to touch on this, there was a time. I'm not sure what the share price is of it, so it's not one I've got on my watch list. There was a time when there was a bid for this, wasn't there, in 23 or 22 or something like that? What price was
Yep.
that? What was the price for that? Do you remember?
I can't recall off the top of my head. But
I'm sorry, you're voicing TV.
I was going to say, it was certainly a lot higher than today's price. Oh dear, this frog's
I've
come
got
back
th I've got
again.
th I've got th I've got £30 in my head, I think. I think I've got 30 pounds. I could be
It could
wrong.
well
I'll have
be.
to do a search. I'm going to put a search in my little thing here and see if I can find it. But yeah, so it's one of them that's had a poor recent Q3. And for me, Henry, if it's a good enough, this is the thing, right, that people struggle with, right? The share price comes down. It comes down because they're saying that right now, yeah, the revenues or the margins or the profitability has come down somewhat. So the share price tracks that down, right? For me, we need to be watching that share price come down. Has the quality of the company changed? No. The quality of the company still remains there, and there might be increasing in the quality of what they're doing regarding the quality of the contracts that they've got, the quality of the companies they're getting contracts with. Yeah. They're reducing their debt, maybe. Yeah. They're trimming their staff and CapEx costs. Yeah. But right now, because they're going through all of this sort of structural change, and before they've rejected a takeover, people have gone, oh, well, the opportunity's there, is gone. And the share price just drifts and drifts and drifts. And I'm looking at the quality of the company staying there, share price going, and that's when I'm buying. So people say, well, Pete, how do you work out when to buy? I buy stuff when it's unloved. That's when I buy. You know what I mean? And it's one of those stocks that's been around and about forever. And unfortunately, if we don't love it, what happens, Henry? Somebody else comes along and says, we'll give you a 33% premium, we'll give you a 40% premium, and we'll take it out of circulation. Yeah. And what, 297 million? One of the larger entities is going to take that out relatively easy, mate. Yeah. I'm thinking as well, Henry, is this sort of, I'm trying not to ask you a question because I'm not sure what voice is going to come out, but I remember Aggreko. Is that the same sort of space it was in? The power sort of
It was,
support
yes.
stuff? So Aggreko got taken out many years ago, several years ago, at a significant premium. So eventually, I think this is going to get taken out as a power supply, power support sort of company. Let's see
I
what
can
voice you've got.
totally
Come
see
on,
that.
talk to me.
I shall struggle through the I don't know where this has come from. But yeah, effectively they had a huge drop off in order intake, and they've been destocking ever since. But orders
Right, okay.
dropped terrifically last year. In fact, I think it was 2 years ago almost. And they've not really got themselves back on their feet yet. They're forecasting growth next year and the year after. And really, it is dependent on where the management can get these orders back in and get revenue going in the right direction. But one thing that did catch my eye, it's always been an expensive company. I mean, when I first looked at this, I think the forecast PE was in the mid to high 30s, and anything over 20 starts to give me a nosebleed or a frog in my throat in this case. But we're down to a forecast PE of 27, so it's lowered a little. But they've not just sat there and gone, oh, well, it's a temporary issue, we'll just carry on as normal. They've actually been hacking and slashing at their operating costs. Now, their adjusted operating cash flow on their last report actually grew. So despite the fact that revenue's going down and their order intake's going down, their operating cash flow increased to 34 million last year from 30 million the year before. And they've got a cash conversion rate of 259%, which is quite astounding. Now, for those of you that perhaps don't know what a cash conversion rate is, it's effectively the ratio of how much of the company's cash flow is converted into net profit. It's calculated by dividing a company's cash flow from operations by their net income. And the higher the figure is, the greater the percentage, the more efficiently the company is managing its expenses and its working capital and its long-term investments. And so a ratio of 259% to me is a big green light on the dashboard going, management's taking this situation extremely seriously, and they're doing everything that they can to turn the company around. And so I've got a feeling that if they can start to get orders ticking in again, this is going to take off like a rocket, because they've had a terrible 3 years. I think 2021 they were down 60% share price. The year after they were down 35%. I think even this year they're down a couple of percent. And this is all on the back of orders slowing down. Worries about China, worries about America. If that order book starts to pick up again, I could see this doing very well if it doesn't get taken out first.
Yeah, I'm just a correction on. I was just spinning plates in my head to try and get the data for you, and it's saying here that this deal, this takeover that they rejected, they rejected maybe three attempts were made for them, from Advanced Energy Industries based in Denver, and then eventually in June they announced that they will not pursue a takeover. The share price crashed on the 18th of June. Over 14%, and it went towards 13.40, £13.40 at that stage. I'm not sure what the low is of the year, but right now, it's the sort of thing, Henry. I think somebody will be come back. There's usually a 6 month wait where the other company can't come back again. That was in May, so November again they would be open to come back and have another little look at it. But I suspect, given the elections in the US. That they may not come back in November, and they'll probably wait until the new year to assess the lay of the land. But there's a bid opportunity definitely there, potentially. And ignoring that, as you say, if they can drive the revenue stream back up, back north, then definitely, they'll be bouncing again. The re-rating will start. Everyone will be saying this is cheap, as they normally do with US UK companies. And it'll get re-rated, mate. So yeah, opportunities abound there. It's probably one I need to have a look at, because it's one that I've not looked at for a long time. The fact that you've got a US company previously sniffing around at it tells you that it's whatever they were wanting to price it at, was again, there's room for maneuver there as well. So yeah, I will be having a look at that, my friend. Thank you very much. So now I've not looked at that. Wasn't on my watch list. Wasn't on my radar, but I will definitely have a look at that one. Now I'm conscious of your dinner date, Henry. We've got 13 minutes, and the alarm's going to go off on my phone. And we're going to keep Ian happy by keeping it close to 60 minutes. I'm going to briefly talk about this company. It's also had a difficult 6 months to a year or so. Share price has been drifting somewhat of late. It's a specialist packaging company. It falls into the parameters, Henry, of your market cap for small caps. Market cap is £176 million. It is a specialist packaging company engaged in designing, manufacturing, and distributing protective packaging products. Operates in two segments: packaging distribution and manufacturing operations. Its packaging distribution segment is engaged in the distribution of packaging materials and supply of storage and warehousing services in the UK, Ireland, and Europe. The manufacturing operations segment is engaged in the design, manufacture, and assembly of timber corrugated foam-based packaging materials in the UK. It offers protective packaging products to a range of sectors such as retail, e-commerce, consumer goods, food, logistics, mail order, electronics, defense, medical, automotive, aerospace, and others. Which company am I talking about, Henry?
McFarlane.
Macfarlane. Ticker symbol MACF. Currently priced at £1.13, or near enough where the price was when I was looking at it earlier today. It's a P of 12, a little yield of 3.2%, which is not too bad of the yield, really. Whilst you wait for it to recover, as I said earlier, price range 98 pence to 147, sitting at 113. It's got a bit of pulling out to do regarding its current revenue streams. August H1 results were fair to middling to downbeat, if to be fair. Outlook was broadly in line. Revenue was down 8% year to date. Profit before tax was down 3%. Dividend was up a scratch at 2%. However, interesting thing about this company is that it's made a few bolt-ons. It's going to get the revenue streams from them going forward and hopefully into next year. Debt free, Henry. I know what you're always asking me. How much cash has it got, Pete? Is it in debt, mate? It's debt free. Yeah. It's a smaller one of the entities. The larger ones, obviously, Smiths is going through what it's going through with the takeover. Smurfit Kappa and WestRock have merged. There's not many of these smaller packaging companies left. Do I want it to be taken over? No, I don't. However, it's at risk. And lots of the distribution companies have been taken over in the past year and a half, 2 years as well, which is what it's involved in. So yeah, it just needs to shift more boxes, more packaging to get the volumes up. And I think once again it could get a re-rating. Very, very interestingly, and the reason why I'm saying about 2025 here is that, and I've only skimmed this, so I've not done a full research on this entity, is that they've got the ex-CEO of Zote Foams, yeah, a chap called David Stirling. He's going to be taking up a position as a non-exec director on the first or whatever the beginning of the year of 2025. And I'm like, why does he want a non-exec role at that particular small sort of entity? Obviously, he gets paid. Never mind the money, he's going to get paid, but not doing it for charity. But it's an interesting coup for them to get a former CEO to come and act as one of their NEDs. So I thought that was a very, very interesting appointment there. And that's why I plucked that one out. Can they make a better fist of it in H2? Might be too early. We're going to the festive season where lots of packaging is going to be going out. Lots of new packaging is going to be done for the festive season. Lots of people are going to be wrapping stuff and boxing stuff up to send to people all over the world. So they could surprise H2, although it might be a struggle, but definitely they've got everything in place for 2025, January onwards, up to December 2025, to have a good 20, good calendar year next year. So that's one for people to research. That's one for people to have a look at. Have a look at it. And then give me a shout. If you think I'm absolutely talking nonsense regarding Macfarlane, then let me know. If you think, yeah, it's interesting, or you've had a look at it, or you currently hold it, let me know on Twitter, X, or on the YouTube channel. Yeah. Henry, you looked at it before, you've considered it, or you're like, nah.
I have. I've looked at Macfarlane. I've looked at most of the packaging companies. I don't own any of them. And I've never pulled the trigger on any of them because it seems like such a boring business. I mean, it's packaging. It seems to have no moat. It's literal old paper. It could get taken out. Likewise, it could just trundle along for years as it is. It's never really been one that I've thought I need to own something like that. So I've looked at it and I've walked on. But it's certainly an interesting name, and it's a high quality business. You might expect Macfarlane. It's very conservative. This isn't a business that's going to take on 20 times its market cap in debt.
No.
So you're not going to wake up one morning and find out that HSBC's pulled their working capital loan and all of a sudden, they've been locked out of their own building. They're not going to do a DGI
Yes,
9
not gonna
and,
happen. You had
they're.
to mention that name. You did it. You said you weren't gonna do it. I asked you not to do it, and you've done it.
I
Oh
know,
dear.
I know. But you're
Oh.
not suddenly going to find out that one of their data centers is made out of cardboard boxes or something. I was trying to make a link there. I'm not sure that one works. But anyway, you get my point.
I do get your point. The other thing, and you did touch on the company and so on and so forth. They've got a long-standing CEO as well. He's been there for a long, long time. That's another good coup because he's seeing the company and he's nurturing that company, slowly but surely. And obviously, it's cyclical, and it's a low-margin sort of business as well. But the margins can be improved as well. They're doing specialist stuff, so they've got quite high margins in certain aspects and lower margins other aspects. But they've got some good clients as well, so that's why
Well,
I'm touching on that one as well, Henry.
it also tends to be a fairly sticky business, I imagine. I mean, if you're buying cardboard boxes, providing the prices don't shoot up 60% in a week, you don't really care where you get them from. Once you've got your supplier, providing they supply the right quality and the right quantity at the right price, you'll stick with them forever. And so Macfarlane, I think, has got a network across Europe, we
Yeah.
refer to it as a small cap. This is actually quite a large established business with thousands and thousands of customers that really don't have much incentive to go elsewhere. And
The
so
trust
it's.
it's getting that trust, Henry. They're involved in the automotive, involved in the in defense. There's the alarm. There is the alarm, Henry, for
No,
you.
that's
Yeah.
our hour.
We're not far off, 5 minutes to. So the fact they're entrusted with this vital piece of kit, this very important thing for the lady, I think the person was talking about Rolls-Royce. You're wrapping that up and you're taking it across the country or overseas. That's trust, mate. So that specialist packaging to get that from A to B, that's what they do. Yeah, with specialist entities, large behemoth companies are trusting them to get that to there to be. So, whether it be cardboard, whether it be foam, whatever the packaging requirements for that particular piece of kit, they're entrusted to do it. So I'm saying, and I'm gonna put myself on a I'll put my hand on the bit of wood there and say, could have a very good 2025, yeah, if they execute and they boost margins and those recent sort of bolt-on acquisitions do well for them. I think it could be a good company to have. 3% yield whilst you wait. Currently sitting at 113. The 52-week high is 147. If it does what it should do, I can see that going back to 147 during 2025. If it doesn't, it'll be sub a pound in a heartbeat. There you go. Ladies, gents, very short podcast. Unless Henry wants to add a little something to go, he can smell his food in his food order in his restaurant. What do you want to say, Henry?
Well, there is one little thing that I'd like to share with the audience before we go.
Go for it.
So being up in Edinburgh, but I've been having a look around a couple of the museums today, and we went to something called the Museum on the Mound, which is sort of, it was described to me by the concierge as the banking museum for Edinburgh, which sounded straight up my alley. So we wandered in there. And they've got the most incredible collection of banking history that you've ever seen. I mean, it really is spectacular. Couple of rooms laid out, including £1 million in cash in real banknotes, sat behind, 30 feet of bulletproof glass and a Henry proof
Which you
door.
butted a few times to try and see if it would break. Yeah, I
Yeah,
know. Yeah.
I did it. But amongst the various interesting items in the room, there was a reference to, bear with me, the original subscribers of Lloyds Bank. And I had no idea about this. Apparently, shareholders haven't always been called shareholders. Originally, if you go back to the sort of 16, 1700, shareholders were called adventurers. And they've
Sounds
got a
about
f
right, regardless of the
they've
stocks that we've picked.
well, this is the thing. I mean, I saw this and I thought, well, this sounds a little bit racy. And a list of they've got an original document, a list of the names of the adventurers in the Bank of Scotland from February the 4th, 1697. All beautifully typeset, beautifully laid out. I mean,
Fantastic.
this document was effectively a shareholder register, and I'd have been quite happy to frame it and put it on my wall at home. Beautiful
Yeah.
document. But yeah, shareholders were originally called adventurers, so perhaps we'll have to run the podcast of the Twin Peaks adventuring.
Absolutely. No, that's great. I love that name, by the way. And I know some people that collect the old certificates, Henry, and they do actually frame them and put them in the office. They're a work of art, and the way that they're written out is just,
Beautiful, beautiful.
beautiful.
But
Yeah, beautiful
if anybody
certificates.
is in Edinburgh, I can recommend it. It's very, very close to the town centre. It's on the Edinburgh Mound. It's sort of just off the Royal Mile. It's between Waverley Station and the Royal Mile. Free to enter. Wonderful, wonderful collection of banking and investment history. So, well worth a visit if anybody's in Edinburgh.
Excellent recommendation, mate. Thank you ever so much. I'm going to finish with a big shout out to, let me just see if I can find his name. Where was his name? Where was his name on here? Yeah, I'm going to give a big shout out to one of the people we met on Friday, Graham Wells, who's running around the whole of, sorry, the south of London, fixing fire trucks, former school governor. Lovely to meet you, sir. Fantastic to engage with you on Friday, and keep up the good work and happy retirement. I'm hoping Rachel Reeves does not bust your pension, mate. Take care and God bless you all. Henry, thank you ever so much for fitting the pod in and your break up in Edinburgh. And thank Verity again for me for allowing you to grace us on here for the hour. It's 6 o'clock. Go and get your suited and booted, mate, and go for your meal. Thank you ever so much for helping us with this pod again. And I will see you on your return next week.
Thank you very
Okay.
much, Peter.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gents, that's a wrap for Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 138. It is a precisely 6 o'clock. We're going to say over and out. Have a fantastic weekend. Stay dry. Donate if you can. And show some kindness to others, ladies and gents. And kindness will be returned to you. Henry. Take care, sir. God bless you.
Au revoir.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.